I'll start by introducing myself. I'm Robert. I work as a consultant, which means I'm pretty used to working with hard pressure and then handling project managers. Some minor setbacks, but usually it goes down well. And on my right-hand side here, we have Christian, the only German that made it into Scorpions. We actually, we've been fighting each other for quite some time, and then we made friends. We met like two ships in the night at a bar, and we decided to do this together. So, usually when we talk about HTML5, it's a question you think it should be pretty easy to answer. You don't need to think too much about it. But then, you know, you start asking your friends. You want some advice. You know, am I really on the right track? But even after all that kind of advice, you can still fail. So, what we're going for here today is trying to be very pragmatic of what we're talking about, not just trying to sell it to you or the journalist approach. And we'll start with talking about why HTML5. And for some people, Steve Jobs, I guess, it's like the second coming. It's Jesus back on earth. And it's not really what it is, but it's going to make interface development a whole lot better on the web. And for me, I've been doing this for about 11, 12 years. And it's a new awakening. And naturally, it's really, really good to see that every player with HTML5, every major company doing things, every web browser vendor is on board. Sure, there's differences, and usually we discuss things back and forth, but everyone's doing this. It's going to happen, and it's happening right now. And I think something to think about, usually when we talk about HTML5, is it ready yet? You know, what's happening with the specifications? It's just a bunch of geeks squishing online that's never going to take off. And I wouldn't worry too much, you know. Try out, start experimenting, see what happens. You know, if it fails, you can always go back again. And sure, you're going to run into problems. There's going to be some setbacks. It's also going to be somewhat awkward sometimes. We've all been there, but it, you know, it's better to take a risk than just to regret not doing it. And the thing is, just, you know, look at the number of people here in the room. Look at the number of people doing HTML5 on the web right now. We're all together in this, and we can really create something amazing. We can make the web open and better, and, you know, actually almost good, maybe. Let's talk about the first thing that actually drives people nuts on the web, and that is forms. I mean, nobody loves to fill out forms. Even the Germans in the room have to agree with that. And because online, it's just, you look at your credit card, you try to find the information, you try to find a telephone number, you have to copy and paste it from Skype into something. It's just not clever yet. Forms are just boring and are really hard to fill out. And also, they're also probably the main security attack point that you have nowadays. If you put an email link on a page, you get less spam than when you put a form there, because people, through a badly written form, can actually access your server. That's why we have to rethink forms. So if you take a look at HTML forms as they are out of the box, they're actually not as rich as others. So you see like Flash forms looking at HTML forms and teasing them and telling them, hey, you don't have that, you don't have that. So you have radio buttons, you have checkboxes, you have text boxes, password boxes, which actually show these stars or round things on Macs. I've seen passwords that were 5 asterisks, because that's what the field showed. So the person really had this as a password. It was wonderful. You have select boxes. You have a file picker that allows you to upload one file at a time, which is a pain in the ass, because normally you have 200 pictures from a conference. You don't want to upload them one by one. So with HTML5, we extended forms a bit to things that make more sense. Like, you have an autocomplete out of the box now, instead of having to write one or use one of these 6 million jQuery plugins that all fail in one way or another. You have an email button that actually allows you to put an email in, and on a smartphone, when you use it, it actually goes through your email contacts and gets the emails from there, so you don't have to type in those emails or drag them in from somewhere else. The same for a phone, the same for a URL. You have a color picker, which is now actually supported in Opera. Before that, the only browser that supported it was the BlackBerry browser, which was really, really interesting because it's the only thing it supported in HTML5. So. You have a range controller, so you can actually drag things along rather than just typing in a number. You have a search bar, which in Safari gives you rounded corners. That's the main difference. You have a number control that goes to you. In .NET, this is called numeric up-down controller. Great word. I love it. And you finally have a date picker. Because date pickers, I wrote four of them, and I hate date and time. It's just nothing more stupid out there. Just make it 10 minutes an hour, 10 hours a day, and I would be happy. But no, we don't. So that's why all this stuff comes from the browser for me, gets localized into different languages for the browser for me, so I don't have to worry about that anymore. And that is exactly what I wanted to have. You have things like autofocus that actually sends the focus of the browser directly into the field. Every search company loves this, and every user has probably typed in his password in clear text on some screen because the page loaded and then sent you to a form without wanting to. You have placeholder where you can tell people what you should put in there, and instead of having a value that then you have to filter out on your backend again, you just get just replaced. You have an autocomplete, we showed that before. You have limits and steps, so the step 5, you from 0 to 360. And you have multiple for file and email. So instead of having to upload one file after another, you just select several of them and upload them. And then you have things like output, meter, and progress, which actually shows you a step-by-step process if you have your really complex form that needs several steps. Of course, validation is something for real men. This is a regular expression that actually takes the RFC of validating an email. If you don't use that, you're doing it wrong. It was one of the job interview questions I had for people at Yahoo who write a validation for an email thing, and some person actually put that in a JavaScript. It was hilarious. Really slow, too. This is actually a screenshot, because putting that much text inside Keynote would have actually killed my browser as well. But why do we have to write all this validation crap over and over again? And especially when you're not a JavaScript developer that knows about APIs, you always say like, oh, I have to do it on a server anyways, and then I have to redo it in JavaScript instead of reusing your server component to also do the JavaScript, but fair enough. Now we have a required attribute on all these elements, and if the field is empty, it actually tells you that you should fill it out. This is in Firefox. This over there is in Opera. This in the middle is, I think, Chrome. No, WebKit, yeah, Chrome. Wow, have it on the desk, really easy. And you can also have a pattern where you can say 0 to 9, which is the Postleitzahl in German, which is a zip code, and it's not the American one. You can style these things, so you have in CSS you have a valid and invalid selector, and that way you can actually make this thing work, and the browser does the validation for you. Of course, you have to do it on the server side as well, otherwise you're just basically hoping Pixie Magic protects your server, because I can always go through curl rather than through the browser to attack your form. But I don't need to do that stuff in JavaScript anymore. I can overwrite that. I can say form no validate. Please don't do the validation of this form if I just have a save button instead of a submit button. I have a new event called onInputChange that always fires when anything changes in the form, so I can validate step by step that way rather than looping through it. And then I have the set custom validity, is that did not work, would basically be the message instead of fill this form free. So what the browser has out of the box, you can overwrite, and then you have actually a check that you can actually have two functions and write your own beautiful bubbles. You have value missing, type mismatch, pattern mismatch, range underflow and range overflow, and all these wonderful things that probably have been written by somebody who likes APIs. So in essence, in HTML forms, in HTML5, we have richer form elements, we have inbuilt validation, we've got events and attributes for custom validation, we have time and date functionality, fuck yes, and we have no more need for terrible client-side validation, because people do it wrong all the time. And almost browser support, it needs a bit of bitching. So a lot of browsers are going very crazy about audio and video right now, but the forms, everybody's like, I don't want to touch them, because it's UI work. It's really hard to make an interface that works for everybody. But we have to do that. We have to have that.
One of the more interesting elements, I think, is Canvas. Before doing things on the web and trying to do things with CSS, it's all squares and you know, fixed lines. How about when doing things diagonal or draw things? And that's where Canvas comes in. I like this quote. It's an actual quote from Steve Jobs. It's like, you know, it was by accident, but it's open. Anyway, to give them cred, Apple did create the Canvas element to begin with, and other people saw that, okay, this is good, we have to do this too. Very basic, you just have an element in your page named Canvas, and you just specify the dimensions. It's going to be this wide, it's going to be this high. Within it, you can have fallback content. There's really not any good accessibility with Canvas now. This is all the HTML you have, basically, and otherwise it all comes down to JavaScript. First, what we do is you get a reference to that element, but you also get the reference to the context of that element. So if you have the canvas, then you can say that this is going to be two-dimensional, and then there's some things going on that we'll get there later with doing three-dimensional as well. And when you have that, you specify which style, which color you want to fill it with, and then use the method fillRect to fill a rectangle there. I'm a bit dubious about the name fillRect, but it's about as thought through as the logo for Oriental Studies, you know. But they probably meant well, at least. And at least you can draw a rectangle, right? So what we can do with the canvas object is you start drawing something there. And it's basically like having a brush on a clear canvas. And then you can save certain states. Like before, you specified the fill style that was going to be red. And then you save that state. And then you sort of go off and you change the fill style to something else with an alpha transparency. And then you fill another rectangle. And then you can clear a rectangle within that rectangle. But then when you do restore again, you're back to where you saved the state. So you can basically, you know, try something out and then go back to the default mode. What we can also do is, naturally, drawing lines, setting a line width, and we're also setting in what way do you want to join this line. Is it going to be rounded or beveled, etc.? Or just, you know, sharp, as everything has been on the web so far. And then I think it's a good way to compare it to drawing something. You put the brush on the paper, and then you just have the coordinates. So you can move the brush to a certain point, you know, do a dot, start drawing, and then just follow the points. And then, naturally, you have also a method to close the path. Like, if you start drawing, and then you choose close path, and it goes all the way back to where you started. And you can fill it with the fill color you had. You can also do arcs and different things to start drawing shapes. So if you look at all that code, what we did start with here is that we first draw a rectangle up here. Then we changed the color, and then we used restore again. So we went back to red color. We got the red one there. We had clear rectangle there. And this, which is the line 2 moving to around with the rounding things, making it a bit more fussy. And the last thing here, using a little bit of pie, is just drawing a circle with arc. Another thing you can do with canvas is basically, okay, fine, you have this canvas, you can draw it, you can create things. So like here, you have a fill style, you fill a rectangle, you draw another rectangle, fine. And it's going to look like that. Okay, good. But what if you just want to show some of this context? What if you want some sort of peephole that you can look into and move around and not show all of the canvas at the same time? So what you do then, in this case, you just create an arc, a circle in this case, and then you use the clip method, which basically means that everything within the circle I draw, you can see through. Everything outside the circle is going to be hidden, and then you can move the circle around or something like that. So the result would be, for the previous code, they still have two red rectangles, but the only thing you can see is through the clip circle, which makes it pretty effective to stage things and just, you know, take things into view when they're needed. Another thing with Canvas is that you can load images and videos and such into Canvas. So in this case, we just have a canvas, we get a reference to the context, and we create an image element. Then we load the view.jpg image, and when it has loaded, use the draw image method to draw it in the canvas. And the nice thing there, even, you know, people could have been drawing something in the canvas, or you can load the image, etc., you can take the content in the canvas and save it. And before, you know, we could never save the creations that people did on a website. But now we can get data out as a data URL. The result of reading the canvas here is naturally a lot of code. Maybe not that readable, but it definitely speaks to my matrix complex. And, you know, the more unreadable code, the better, right? Naturally, it's not in Internet Explorer. Not yet. Shocker. And what happened was, me being Swedish, being proud for another Swede here, is that A Swede called Emil came up with the idea that in Internet Explorer they have something called VML from, I think, IE 5.5, which is vector markup language. You know, the same wonderful language we use to create graphs in Microsoft Office. You know, another God-given product. So anyway, he wrote this script, so you can write the canvas code, and his script parses your canvas code, turns it into VML, and renders it into Explorer as well, which is quite good. It doesn't cover up for everything, but you know, most of the basic stuff you can do, and get it more cross-platform. And naturally, when we have a new technology, it's mandatory to create something with a reference to Nintendo. That's sort of like the quality seal of approval. That, you know, do we have a Nintendo game in this technology? Okay, we're going for it. For once, it wasn't Super Mario, it was actually Mario Kart. So this game is built in Canvas, and if you have a computer with an accelerometer, you can turn the car with the computer and such. Not really useful, but you can do it. And quite some time ago, a guy created this video demo, which basically takes a video, plays it, but loads the video into a canvas. I mean, you click the canvas, it explodes there. But every small piece that explodes out of there still plays its parts of the video, and then it crawls back into place again. You know, pretty hard to sell in every customer project, but still, you can just a showcase of mixing canvas and video, and mixing different kinds of media in the same context. Sure, when we talk about the technology, but you know, what about SVG? I can't learn both, I'm just a developer. What should I choose? Should I choose SVG or should I choose Canvas? And that's not really how it works. You know, Canvas is going to be good for some things and SVG for others. And the basic things to think about that is that Canvas is bitmap. It's just pixels there on the screen, whereas naturally SVG is vectors, so you can make it larger and manipulate it in that way. SVG is great for different kinds of interaction. You can apply a mouse over event to a circle in that page. You can't do that in Canvas. Canvas is just colors on a screen. Whereas Canvas is quite good for doing things fast, gaming and speed and getting a real good performance out of it. Also, that Google some time ago went out with the statement that they're indexing content in SVG, which is quite good, because then we can have numbers and data and different things that will actually be read as well by machines.
Let's talk about video and audio on the web, because we noticed that a bit before already. The main thing is right now Flash is video, and that's basically where we're at. And the problem is that Flash is a black box inside your document. Like, that box cannot talk to anything else outside that box unless there's an API. In YouTube, for example, there is an API that only allows you some things and other things it doesn't. You're at the mercy of the API developer and the poor person documenting that API and trying to understand what it's been doing. It's actually alien to the browser, and we shouldn't be using that. Because native things in the browser are much easier to use and much easier to manipulate. So with HTML5 video, we actually have video and audio that are just like any other HTML element. I can actually layer them above each other, I can rotate them, I can put them off screen, I can do whatever I want with that. And on Internet Explorer, for example, it's always a total pain to put something on top of a Flash movie. You have to go through like an iframe to fix it and all kinds of things that you shouldn't have been doing if it were a browser. You have native controls provided by the browser, which means also that there's better accessibility. Like, the native controls in HTML5 video can be used with a keyboard. Most Flash players cannot be used with a keyboard, and even if they could, you can't tap into a Flash movie inside any other browser in Internet Explorer. So if you want to have a keyboard-accessible Flash game, you have to have some way of people getting them into the Flash first, like by focusing an element in there, or actually to use a full-screen Flash without anything else on that HTML document. As a native and simple API, and it's actually documented, it makes a lot of sense, and as an easy interaction with other technologies, for example, Canvas and CSS, as we've seen before. So how do you embed video and audio into your HTML page? This is where it gets interesting, because it should be terribly simple. It actually just could be video source equals your video file and controls. Up there should be everything that you actually need. Where it gets interesting is that you need all these different formats now to support all the different browsers and systems and mobile phones and iPads and whatever stuff people use nowadays, you kids. You have to give them in different formats. So the first thing you always have to give is an MP4. because iOS devices don't read any other source element but the first one. So even if you put something in there that should be understood by Apple devices, it will not find it unless it's the first one. Great implementation there. What you can do actually, which is really cool, is you can check if the device that your page is running right now is a minimum of 800 pixels. So that is like the 512 KB high quality version of that MP4. If you go on it on an iPhone with a lesser resolution or another iOS device with lesser resolution at 800 pixels, it takes the next one in this list, which is the smaller resolution here. You then have WebM, which is the savior of the internet according to Google, and then you have the Ogg Vorbis, which has been a nice open format for a long, long time right now that nobody used. And then you basically have a fallback where you say, like, watch the movie here or download the movie here, because we really tried everything and your browser just doesn't do it right. And why do we have to do all this? It's because of copyright. And it's because of IP, of different video formats, and basically people bitching at each other right now. It's actually quite funny how Microsoft fixes Google's browser, Google fixes Microsoft's browser. Nobody thinks about Apple, and Flash sits there and is like, hey, it's been working for years. What are you guys on about? So we're in a bit of a mess. But it's not that hard to just put some source elements in there. The pain is actually converting the video for you. And there's a website that does not get enough credit for what it does, and that is archive.org, which is absolutely awesome. Because it doesn't only show you how your websites looked in 1996, which is wonderfully embarrassing, but it also converts video for you. So when I have a video I just created as a whatever morph or whatever my computer does for me, and then I convert it to a WebM, uploaded it to archive.org, and archive automatically converts it to an MPEG-4 and to an Ogg video for me. It just takes an hour, and then basically you go back to the page and you've got your embeddable videos in there, and you don't have to do anything yourself. And it's hosted for you. And this is service that no other company provides until last week. And nobody says, like, it's great because the website just looks terrible. But we are at an open source conference. That's not a problem here. So another service came out last week, which is called Bitly by encoding.com in San Francisco. And that's just it's just a dog's bollocks. It's absolutely amazing. Because what it creates is this short video, short URL of your video. So you upload a video, and while you upload it, it converts it already for you. And once it's finished converting to all the different formats that are there, it supports Blackberries, Nokias, things people shouldn't be using anymore, iPhones, iPads. It gives the HTTP streaming for iOS devices. It gives you Ogg Vorbis and WebM and all the things that you need to do. And it does it to you. The whole page is actually a range bar that tells you how far down the line it is. You don't have to stay on the page. You just can finish it, and then it sends you an email when all the videos are available. What's even more interesting is this URL is all you have to put into your source, because it automatically recognizes which client is in use and sends you the right video. So they've took the whole problem of the five different sources server-side, and it works. And this is what more people should be doing. And it's a great service to try out right now. It's free. I've been playing around with it with lots of interviews for our blog, for example. The controls are all different in different browsers, which is a nightmare of every designer out there, but, well, they got to do something. Firefox, Opera, Safari, and Chrome. And Safari is the only one that allows full-screen HTML5 video from the native controls. Others don't. Why? I don't know. I think it might be a security issue for a lot of other browsers, and I think it's a good idea, because I could show you a video that looks like your form input, and you put your data in. I could fool you into doing stupid things. So you have an API which allows you to load a media. It can play type. It tests for the type that the browser supports right now. And the return values are probably, maybe, and nothing. So it's an interesting API. It's still the making of it. There's a play function. There's a pause function. There's no stop function, because we don't need stop functions anymore, because stop buttons were only necessary for reel-to-reel tape, so they don't rip. You can add track, which is for subtitles, which is not really supported by any browser properly yet. There's lots and lots of stuff that you can know about the video, and you can read out. And there are lots and lots of events that actually you can subscribe to know when something happens to the video. So you've got full control over the video, not a black box in the middle of the screen, and you hope it works, and you paid a lot of money for it. There's a demo on the W3C side, which actually has a video that, when you play it, it shows you all the different states that you have here, and the current time, and so on and so forth. So you see all the things you can do with a video in HTML5, and you can also test it that way in different browsers, what works with which. And this is something when I was last time in Mountain View for Mozilla, the Indiana Jones movies were on television, and I was there with my browser, and I thought I should do something with open technology. I made this little demo that uses the flight of Charles Lindbergh from New York to Paris, and as the soundtrack of Indiana Jones is copyrighted, we had to be a bit creative about this. Have a half transparent video over it and find the timing points when to show the video and when to stop the video and how many steps I have by how long the video is. So this is all done in a bit of JavaScript. It's on GitHub. You can impress your girlfriend or whatever with. Transforming HTML5 video was another demo that I wanted to do. I'm a big fan of like these little blooper things in the background or these little things hidden. So I always wanted to have a player that allows me to zoom into a video and to rotate a video to find something, and no player allows me to do that right now. But with CSS3 transformation and a bit of JavaScript, and again, this is on GitHub as well, I can actually zoom into the video, move the video around, left, right, top, top, bottom, and I can also rotate the video, which I've been doing in a second, I think, which I've never seen before. And this is all HTML5 video and a bit of JavaScript and CSS3 transition. So none of that stuff is proprietary. None of that stuff I should be clever for. Other things you can do, you can play with SVG and you can overlay videos with filters. So you can say, for example, you want to have a filter that makes only the outlines. You want to have the clip path of it. You can change it to the high color volume. You can blur a video, which you couldn't do before. Then you have clip paths where you can say, only show me that circle of that video, and so on and so forth. So all these things are possible with these filters. You can simulate a green screen in JavaScript by just taking an image and taking a video and copying every picture of that video into a canvas, reading out the pixels and replacing the pixels with the pixels in the background. That was not possible with any player that I knew either. And that's JavaScript, pure JavaScript running even on a nice mobile phone. You can go completely nuts by using something, by analyzing a video and finding these white dots in it, and then injecting another video into the other video. This is all, again, a bit of JavaScript and a bit of Canvas and SVG. That works full screen, frame rate, doesn't make my fan come up on my MacBook, which a lot of Flash solutions, sadly enough, do.
Video is all fine and flashy and watching Indiana Jones flying. But we also need to do something in everyday life when we deliver something. And it's about storing things on the client side, just trying to avoid unnecessary lookups to the server all the time, and requests and data being sent, which is becoming even more important nowadays with developing things on mobile. And before, storing things on the client side, the only option was cookies. And, well, as we all know, cookies aren't that good. Especially not from a JavaScript perspective. There's no key value pair, it's basically just a long string and you need to write regex to parse it, etc. And, you know, about 2 kilobytes of data, you can't really save that much. With local storage and session storage, you can save at least 5 megabytes. If you want to save more on the client, the client needs to approve it. The website's going to ask you, I want to store 10 megabytes, is that okay? If you look at a common example of using session storage here, if you have the key FU and the value Sarah Palin, FU naturally stands for Facebook user. I don't know what you're thinking of. And with session storage, we just have a set item. We set that key. We have get item. We read out that value again. The only difference, actually, between session storage and local storage is that session storage is naturally for that session. As long as you're navigating around in that website, data is going to be saved. As soon as you close that session, it's gone. Whereas local storage is being saved forever and ever. It depends on the web browser how you clear that. It could be cached, it could be private settings. But it's a really good way to have data, and it could be parts of the interface. You know, Gmail on mobile, you don't need to load the web interface all the time. You can save that in local storage and just load the actual email that you got. Naturally, we want to know more about Sarah. I think it's vital for the afterworld that we store all this data somewhere. So if we want to save more structured data here, we can have a JavaScript object. We have the key contest, what he was in, and her talent. And when we have that, what we can do is use a native JSON object in web browsers. It even works in IE8. So what we do is that we have this object, and with local storage and session storage, you can only say strings. So we take the object, we use the JSON object, and turn it into a string and put it into local storage. And then we want that data again, we want to read it out and work with it. We just use the JSON object again, use the parse method, and parse it into an actual object again. So it's quite good to get more structure of your data and be able to save more and not just having a long string again. Other saving formats on the web. WebKit and Opera implemented WebSQL, which is basically doing SQL in the web browser, which is a, well, an idea at least. And the thing there is that Microsoft and Firefox has said that we're not going to implement it. We don't believe that that's the right approach. So the option that's really happening now is IndexedDB instead, which is more of a JavaScript-friendly format. Also, in this day and age, what we want to do is to be able to work offline. You know, we travel around, we have our laptops and phones, etc. And when we lose the connection to the great internet hole, what do we do? Can we keep on working? And actually, we want this to be as seamless as possible. So what we have is online and offline events in the web browser. So if you get connected, you get the online event. Fine, I can do everything. But you get an offline event when you lose the connection. And to be fair to Microsoft, they have the best support for this. All web browsers have in the file menu, you can choose work offline. But you don't want it to be a choice, or rather, you know, oh, I see a tunnel coming up, maybe I should. It should be magic. It should just work. So in IE, if you pull the Ethernet cable or turn off wireless or something, it immediately calls this event. It doesn't really work that stable in other web browsers. An option to complement that is to poll the navigator object. On the navigator object, we have an online property, which is just going to return true or false. So we can keep on polling that, which is better. You know, polling is never an optimal solution, but it makes work for now at least. And with HTML5, we're going true offline. So if you have an HTML5 document, on the HTML element, we have a manifest attribute, which basically just points to manifest file. And within that manifest file, we're going to list all the files they want to be available offline. So first we just have a directive that says the manifest file. We have a version number, a comment here, because for web browsers to read the manifest file if it has been updated or get the content again, you need to actually update the contents of the manifest files, otherwise web browsers don't check it. And within the file, we have the cache directive, which basically says that, okay, store the offline HTML file, store the base CSS file, etc., make them available offline, so I can just keep on working. We have the fallback thing here, which basically means that if I'm online, use the online CSS, otherwise naturally default to the offline CSS. We can also require some URLs of our app. If it's going for a live update here, you have to be connected. There's no fallback, there's no other option.
Well, this is all great, but we actually have to think about what else is coming. And whenever we think about these inventions, what we're going for, we always go for the, like, make it pictures, make it moving pictures, make it 2D, make it 3D. And then we forget putting a story in a movie, and we still make millions of dollars with it, sadly enough. So the next thing that we're having right now, and this is a demo that we're not going to show because it takes too long, but I very much encourage you to take a look at it. It was shown here last year as well, which is the Flight of the Navigator. So that one actually is a interface that is a 3D flight through a city, much like a Blade Runner style, which was very disappointing the first time I went to Tokyo, that it doesn't look like that, no flying cars and stuff like that. But this one is a 3D flyby, so it's like any 3D game, but it actually has live YouTube videos on these different screens instead of just normal videos. It has a Twitter stream coming on like one of those tickers that you have on Times Square, and the music of the whole system is actually analyzed by JavaScript in the browser with the audio API from Firefox. So there's all these like little synthesizers going on all these different buildings. So you basically have a 3D interface with live data from the web, with video transcoded onto these buildings and everything like that running in JavaScript smoothly without killing your machine. And it's quite impressive that we can do these things nowadays. The other thing we have is a nice example is like when you really go to town with video and canvas, You can do shape detection. So in this case here, it actually analyzes when somebody is running through the picture and finds the shape of that person, and actually finds that lady in the French office here, and she turns around as well and finds out where the hands are and these kind of things. So you can do that in JavaScript nowadays. It's like this has been like hardcore systems that you had to buy before that. So the first thing we do, of course, is recognize arms and shapes and stuff. And the second thing we actually do is then detect nudity in JavaScript, which is another, which is a script that he says like to block out nudity from his surfing experience. And let's not be judgmental here. It's probably what he wanted to do. But it's quite interesting that you can find something like that that used to be hardcore filters for like Exchange servers and these kind of things. And you can do that now in the browser with JavaScript because you got full access to the images, you got full access to the video, and every single pixel in there, instead of just having a video and like, hey, hopefully it plays. And that's not really what we want to have. Next things we're working on, and already there for quite a while, web workers. So instead of having a JavaScript that really slows down your page, and you get this like, this script is really slow, this do you want to continue, blah, interface, you can do a web worker. So all you have to do is sign new worker, send a function there that is really computation heavy, and it sends you an event back when it's done. Instead of slowing down your main browser, you just have an extra thread running for that calculation for that certain amount of time, and then it gets deleted again. WebSockets allow you to do long polling and real-time multi-user interaction, so you can actually have a ticker tape on a finance website, getting like real-life information rather than polling every 50 milliseconds and things like that. There's a game out there called Rockets, which actually is a multiplayer shoot-em-up game where you can shoot other people from Twitter with a little spacecraft, and that one scales up to thousands of users using WebSockets. It's right now not in Firefox 4 because there's a security bug with the protocol WebSockets is built on, which also affects every Flash and every Java implementation of the same protocol. So we have a really insecure thing on the web, and we shut it down right now because we can do that, and it makes sense not to give insecure stuff out. You can still turn it on as a developer and play with it, and once the protocol is done, we put it in there again. You have audio analysis, as I said, where you can actually analyze every song, the beats per minute, the pitch, and actually convert it as well, like make songs darker, lighter, these kind of things. Face detection in JavaScript is available as well already. So you can do all kind of like auto-tagging of photos while you upload them in JavaScript. Server-side rendering in JavaScript with Node.js, everything we do right now, we actually simulate server-side as well. So, for example, YUI, the Yahoo User Interface Library, YUI 3, has a build that actually renders at these state pickers and these kind of things, client-side and server-side. So if you're on a mobile phone that doesn't want to have that massive JavaScript widget, it actually falls back to the server and still you maintain one widget in both places. It's absolutely fascinating to reuse it, server-side and client-side. And you have image generation as well, which we showed before, that you can actually create images on the fly. And I mean, that's why I used PHP in the past with GD and Image Magic with Perl before, and nowadays you don't need to do that anymore, you can do it in the browser. Touch interfaces are the next steps, of course. Of course, multi-touch interfaces are a very interesting thing. If you ever had a chance to play with that Microsoft table, for example, it's pretty cool. I mean, it almost made me touch C# again, but then I woke up again. And the next thing we have is device input support, which we now have in Flash, which we don't have in browsers yet, but there is a spec out there, and we're thinking about how can you use your camera as an input device, how can you use your microphone as an input device in HTML5 in JavaScript, because we want to have chat roulette in HTML5, let's face it.
Right, when we prepare the presentation, I apparently draw the shortest straw to give the happy ending of the talk. So I tried Googling it for some good suggestions. Nothing would really work here, I think. So what I went for instead is that, seeing what went on yesterday, I'm really hoping we can top that tonight and make it even better. And you know, feel free to grab me or Christian or anyone else, ask questions or you know, find out how sick we really are. This is fine. That's why we're here, to have a good time and to learn at the same time. I have a, well, slide link. Also, I have an HTML5 test site where you can just run different things in HTML5, see the code being run, see how it works in your web browser. And I really encourage you to go in there, take the code, and break it, because that's how we learn. We just remove things, see how the web browser reacts, try and fix it again, you know, if you can. And also, to end on a serious note, I mean, we're developers, we're whining and bitching and you know, trolling online. But at the end of the day, you know, let's try and make things better. Let's start listening to each other and then talk to each other. It doesn't matter if it's Microsoft or Google or whatever. You know, let's for once, just try and work together and see what happens, you know. Might be good. Thank you for coming and take care of each other.